This is headquarters, United States Forces in India and Burma. This theater, in collaboration with the Blue Network, is presenting another in the series of officially recorded broadcasts which are heard in the United States under the title Yanks in the Orient. By the time this recorded broadcast is released, a determined American force will again be on the march in North Burma. In this force is a group of veterans, men who have tangled with the Jap before and defeated him. To give you an authentic picture of how war looks to the men who are fighting it, we bring you the voices of these men from an area where they are preparing to go into battle again. We take you now to the jungle headquarters of an American unit. This is headquarters of an American unit in Burma. And here are some of the men of this outfit. They have been through months of jungle fighting against the Japanese and will shortly be fighting again. They are the only really indispensable part of the Allied plan to destroy the Japanese armies in Burma. They are the soldiers. Right now, they're getting ready to move out on the second phase of the campaign, which General Stilwell planned to eliminate the Japanese in half of Burma and completely reopen the land routes to China. The war has no mission more important than the one which is entrusted to these American infantry soldiers, and none more difficult and dangerous to carry out. You have read of the jungles of Burma. These men live in them. You've heard of the Purple Heart, which they hang on your shirt when you're wounded by the enemy. There were more than 600 Purple Hearts awarded in the unit from which these soldiers came for wounds sustained during the work they have done so far. But these soldiers, like other men who endure and accomplish less, can only report what they have suffered and accomplished as it appeared to each individual man. That is because the actual fighting of a battle is a series of individual experiences. Here, then, is an Army radio observer to interview a few of the quiet-spoken soldiers of this American Burma unit.
As you know, the infantry soldiers whose voices you're about to hear have fought in the campaign to capture the important North Burma transportation center of Michinon. They're jumping off now for further activity in Burma. We can get an idea of what lies ahead from reports and what has already happened. Let's talk first to one of the most important men in any fighting infantry organization, a platoon sergeant. This sergeant is Patrick W. Murphy of Call Collin, Michigan. Sergeant Murphy, would you say something about the past campaign?
We came into this fight by air. I had 25 men with me. When we got out of the plane on the Michinon airstrip, we had no idea where to go. But don't let that surprise you. That's the way it is in a battle. We set up a perimeter around the airstrip. That's a ring of foxholes to protect the airstrip from enemy attacks to gain it. As it was very important for us to hold it, as all our supplies were brought in by air. One of the first patrols we sent out ran into an ambush, and the first platoon lost 10 men. We were on the line for 35 days, the first stretch. Our platoon leader was killed the first morning we were up there. I was platoon leader then, and it was 21 days before I got another officer. In 2 days, he was killed, and I was platoon leader again. We went out on a patrol and chased some Japs into Colonel Hunter's command post. 70 of the Japs were killed at that time. The next day, we took 7 pillboxes with grenades and TNT charges. The following day, we advanced 1,000 yards and then lost another officer. That day, we killed about 25 Japs on the river trying to escape. The next day, the battle ended. We had been at it for 42 days.
What are some of the things that stand out in your memory of those 42 days, Sergeant Murphy?
When we broke the pillbox line, a squad leader and I crawled into a shell crater and shot them as they came out. Another time, a Jap mortar shell blew up the ammunition in an ammunition belt I had put down on the ground right behind me. It also riddled my helmet and shoulder half, and I never got a scratch. When the whole thing was over, there were 10 of us left out of a platoon of 45 men, and we had only our company commander left, Captain Robert G. Maxson of Washington, D.C., and it was rough, and I was glad it was over.
Thank you, Sergeant Murphy. Here's a man from another company who went through that same campaign. He's Private First Class Francis J. Quinn of Worcester, Massachusetts. PFC Quinn is an observant soldier. He kept a record of the first combat his platoon ran into. Here it is, as he tells it.
The second day at the front, our platoon was out on patrol. Enemy troops had been reported to our left front between the road and the rice paddy. Two Gurkha scouts led us to the area where we quietly and swiftly set up a skirmish line plus the undergrowth for Japs. After we got into position, we called for mortar fire, and it was quickly poured in. Then our platoon leader signaled for the fire to be lifted and gave us the order to advance. As we advanced through the heavy underbrush, the squad on our right ran smack into a Japanese command post, which they fired on. Shortly afterward, a NIP light machine gun opened up and wounded one officer and killed an enlisted man. We then reached the edge of the rice paddy, and all hell broke loose. A Jap jumped up 5 feet in front of me. I fired a slug and hit him in the neck. My squad leader also fired on him and put 2 rounds into the NIP stomach as he was falling to the ground. He sprang up slightly to our right, and he was quickly put out of action. Our squad positioned as they retreated across the open rice paddy. At this point, a runner arrived to tell us that there was no supporting squad. They had either been killed off or had withdrawn. Then we realized that we were alone. Our platoon leader reorganized us, and we found we were reduced to 10 men. We withdrew to the road and then began going over the underbrush our other two squads had entered. We spent 3/4 of an hour clearing this underbrush and finishing off the remaining Japs. We counted 17 NIPs lying dead at the edge of the rice paddy and about 20 more wounded or dead strewn across the paddy. Our success in this engagement was due mainly to the element of surprise. The Japs didn't know quite what hit them. Our success was also due to the effective automatic fire laid down by our BAR man. He got through this scrape, but was killed in a later engagement. For only the second day at the front, this run-in with the enemy really proved to be quite an experience.
After you had gained more experience of this kind, did you ever go on any night attacks?
Yes. I'll tell you about one. We started out late in the afternoon as the sun was setting. We set up a skirmish line and had a machine gun firing into the thick undergrowth where the Japs were reported. We had mortar fire as well as rifle and machine gun fire concentrated on the enemy. Then we built up our line and started to advance across the rice paddy. At this moment, a flare went off, and it was not our flare. Everyone hit the paddy, which was knee-deep in water and crawling with leeches. When we hit the water, it looked like a bunch of dominoes falling. We remained in the water until the flare burned out. We knew we had hit some of the NIPs because we could hear them moaning out in front of us in the darkness. We slept in 3-man groups for the rest of the night with a man from each group on guard. At daybreak, we silently moved in on the Japs. We caught 4 in the undergrowth and quickly took care of them. We then crossed the trail and found about 25 Japs killed by our rifle and mortar fire the previous evening.
Thank you, PFC Francis J. Quinn. Now let's meet a soldier out of Company A. He's Technical Sergeant Willie E. Morton of Jacksonville, North Carolina. Sergeant Morton also has a very clear recollection of some things which have recently happened.
Well, most of my actions was in combat patrols. They were pretty dangerous in this part of Burma because of the mountainous terrain. The Japs are very poor ambushers, at least from what I've seen. I was in one patrol that was ambushed 3 times within 2 miles. We killed 17 of the ambushers. At one time, we killed a Jap patrol of 7 men, and they were armed with 2 light machine guns, 1 knee mortar, and 4 rifles, with plenty of ammunition. We were always sent out on patrols in the daytime and also worked as guards on the perimeter at night. Once when I was on an outpost close to Michinol, a native Burmese with me spotted 12 Japs closing in with fixed bayonets. I had 30 caliber water cool machine gun well dug in, and I waited till they got about 30 yards away before I let them have it. They didn't get any further.
You were in the original group known as Merrill's Marauders, weren't you, Sergeant?
Yes, we came down the Lido Road in more than a 700-mile march, which ended at Michinol.
What happened along the way?
Well, quite a few things happened there. At Chattanooga, we were under a 38-hour barrage of artillery, which
We pulled patrols so close up to the enemy lines that we could hear the artillery clicking their bolts.
How about the country you were fighting over, Sergeant?
It was pretty thick. In Nipunga, we evacuated a wounded man. It took 4 hours to get him 600 yards. It was pretty tough there.
What's your impression of the Japs?
I think they're very brutal. At one roadblock, we found a Chinese strip and bayoneted through the throat. They had been using him as a pack horse. The Japs are very hard people to fight. Sometimes their artillery is very accurate. For instance, they shot us up. I had my pack and rifle blown up, but I'm still here.
And no thanks to the Japs that you are. Thank you, Sergeant Morton. Now we'd like to have our audience meet a man from Chicago, Technician 5th Grade, Earl F. Walton. You were with the Merrill outfit, were you not, Corporal Walton?
Yes, I came down the road from Leda with the rest of them. I can tell you about the first Jap that was captured at Michina. We let the Burmese into our defense perimeter, and this Jap sneaked in after dark. One of our boys thought the Jap might be Chinese, so he yelled, "Ding Hao." The Jap started to run, and the guards fired and wounded him. We sent him to the medics to be treated. Before he was carried out, this Jap made a statement through an interpreter. He said he was glad he was captured. I don't think they all are like that. Now I'd like to tell you something about the 8 men who went into action with us. These medics are some of the best soldiers we've got. They've saved many a life under fire. I can't understand why these infantry company 8 men don't get combat pay like the rest of us.
We hope the 8 men are recognized, too. We want our listeners to hear now from one of the youngest men in this unit, which is preparing to return to the battle. He is Sergeant William Andorfer of Mount Vernon, Ohio, 20 years of age. Sergeant, how does this last campaign stack up in your mind?
One thing that stays with me is the big number of things that my platoon did. For instance, we were mule skinners for a while. Then we were pulled off this job and sent out to blow up a Jap-held railroad. On this mission, we traveled about 60 miles in less than 3 days, which is good going in this jungle. We had 2 Gurkha guides, and they were really good. They could tell by looking at a trail whether any Japs had recently passed. Those were the men to see if you wanted to learn anything about the jungle.
You were wounded, weren't you, Sergeant?
Yes.
Would you mind telling what happened?
Well, we were guarding our heavy mortars in engagement with the enemy. Our orders were to protect those guns at all costs. I was flank security man. The Japs had one of our platoons trapped in a rice paddy. We were sent up to get out some of the wounded, and we crept so close to the Japs we could hear them jabbering. I was about to shoot one when the lieutenant flagged me down. He had seen a badly wounded American lying in the next rice paddy and didn't want to attract the Japs' attention. Another boy and I volunteered to get this wounded man. As we were dragging him back, the Japs saw us and opened fire. A fragmentation bullet hit me in the eye, neck, arms, and legs. That made me a casualty, too. After that, the Jap knee mortars came too close and we had to get out. I was sent to the hospital and came through okay.
Sergeant Andorfer's is one of the more than 600 Purple Hearts which men in this force have received. Sergeant Andorfer has another ribbon, the Silver Star, for gallantry in action. And that is a part of the story of an American infantry unit in Burma, told by a few of the men who are now here in headquarters, waiting for word to move out into the jungle and tackle their dirty job again. These infantry soldiers ask for very little, just for the chance to do their best, to run their share of the risk, to put up with their part of the hardship. They ask for very little, and very little is what they get. When this recorded broadcast is released in the United States, the men whose voices you've been listening to will again be in combat with the Japanese. We have no doubt, then, that everyone who hears this program will take this opportunity to wish them well. All we need say is summed up in these words. They are the American infantry.
This has been an official United States Army broadcast recorded in Burma by the India-Burma radio team. This activity is authorized by the India-Burma Theater Commander, Lieutenant General Dan I. Sultan. These recordings are released weekly in the United States over the Blue Network. And so, until we meet again, this is the Army of the United States in Burma.
A short while ago, a small war plant employing only 25 people in a remote rural area won the highest production honor awarded in this country, the Army Navy E for excellent. Although most of the employees had had no previous experience with machine tools, they learned their jobs so well that they were selected to take their place with the industrial leaders of the nation. Let their example remind you that it's not what your job is, but how well you do it that counts in this war. This is the Blue Network.